Hello, dear listeners. A tiny cold open before we jump into our exciting book club episode, which was a lot of fun to record. I wanted to let you all know that we have new merch available. It was not available when we recorded this, so we didn't talk about it, but we are both so excited. Oh my god, you guys, we have a beanie. It's so cute. It has an embroidery on the front of two little books that I drew. It is so precious. We are going to spend all of fall and winter in it. And then we also have a new giant mug. So those are linked in the show notes. We wanted to let you know. Also, if you just go to booksunboundpodcast.com, you can see it all there. We hope you enjoy this episode and that you like the merch. Let's jump in.
Everybody, and welcome to Books Unbound, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts, me, it's Ariel, and
me, Raylene. Hello.
And today is our special book club edition. We are talking about 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, winner of the Nobel Prize.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Big stuff.
I just read exactly what was written here.
That's
on the
hilarious.
Front of my book.
What an intro.
As I was reading, I'm glad I decided to actually read the title because I've been calling it 100 Years of Solitude, but it's 100 Years of Solitude.
Yeah.
So there you go. Learning things all over the goddamn place here. Me and Raylene have been laughing about how this episode is going to go because this was quite the undertaking, was it not, really?
Yeah, I started reading this book like 8 weeks ago or something, and I only finished it a couple of weeks ago, and that was through some intense, like, just buckling down and really, really dedicating myself to it, which I don't usually have to do to finish a book, but it was like...
It was a mission.
It was a mission.
It was a journey. It was 100 years of struggle is what it was.
I know. Sometimes I wonder, I'm like, was it only 100 years? It felt like a lot more.
So though, if you haven't heard one of our book clubs before, let me give you a little primer. Raylene and I are going to talk about our feelings about the book a little bit. For a few minutes, and then we dive into the real meat of the podcast is listening and responding to voice clips that are sent in by our listeners. And we've done, this is our sixth book club?
Is it? I have no idea. I can never remember.
I don't really remember either, but we've done a few of these now, quite a few of these now. And behind the scenes, I'm always the one who downloads the voice clips. I go through the email and find the ones that we've got and actually our amazing, incredible social media and everything manager, basically. Well, she runs our social media and our email. Mm-hmm. Kaylee sorted everything into a label. I just had to click the label.
Wonderful.
And the clips were all there. Thank you, Kaylee. But yes, so I downloaded the clips, and I'm used to, like, needing half an hour or something to download all the clips, because we usually get, like, 15 clips or 10 clips or something, and also, me and Raylene are like, ah, geez, we love getting the clips, you know? If you want to send in a clip, send it, because that's what's fun, but we're always like, oh, this is going to be, like, a three-hour episode.
Yeah.
Raylene, the people struggled like we did.
Are there, like, two?
There's six. We only got six clips today.
Okay. All right.
And in one of the emails, the person was like, good luck.
Oh, God. I can only imagine how this is going to go.
So this was a struggle, not for just you and me, but for a lot of people. So, yeah, I guess I'll just generally, I think I do this every book club episode, but I kind of always start off by just generally asking you, how did you feel about the book?
Yeah, so to be completely honest, I kind of hated it, which is sad because at the beginning of the book, say for the first, like, I don't know, 70 pages or so, I was like, this is an adjustment, but I like it. Like, it's kind of weird, but I could see this being a positive reading experience.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
it just went on and on and on. I feel like if it had been, say, a short story, perhaps, or like a shorter novel, like that just didn't dive quite so deep into the family's history, I think I could have enjoyed that a bit more. It was just too much.
Right.
Too much. And I don't think
it was a lot.
I don't think I really like family sagas that last this many generations. I just don't think that that's my cup of tea personally. So in
100 years, that's too much.
Like I was intrigued by the beginning, but by the end of it, I was like, Jesus Christ, I just want this to be over. So I ended up really, really, really disliking the book all in all.
I like your honesty, Raylene. Thank you. That's what we need on the pod. If we don't like a book, we don't like a book. Okay, and so far, we don't like most of the books we read on the book club.
I know. I think we next time, we are literally only going to pick books that we are guaranteed to love. That's my new rule.
Yeah, yeah, and they're all going to be under 50 pages.
100%.
We're a novella book club now.
Short stories and novellas only, please. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how did I feel about this book? Raylene, I went on a journey with this book.
Okay.
I really did. It kind of, I'll get to that in a minute. whoa, Ariel, whoa, pull it back. Okay. I struggled. I had a lot of struggle. And in a big way, it feels like I didn't give the book a fair shot.
Mm.
And I want to explain that a little bit. And I kind of thought it would be fun to talk through this just because it's not, I guess it's not specifically about this book, but it's just a thing that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Wrong book at the wrong time.
Oh, definitely.
You know how we talk about, like, I read this book at the perfect time?
Yeah.
That's a thing, you know, where you just, like, the stars freaking align.
Absolutely.
And you read a book that just for some reason hits you powerfully. Maybe, like, you're just about to graduate from school and you read a book about a girl who's just graduated and it, like, it resonates with you in a way that it would never resonate with you another time.
Yeah.
You know, you could have read it a year earlier, a year later, it wouldn't hit you the same way. I feel like a lot of people have that with Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Mm.
You read that when you're a teenager and you're like, oh my God,
yeah.
You know? And it can still be powerful at other times, but there's almost like every book has its peak point. And
yeah.
If you read it at that point, it's like the experience could not be any better. But then there's the opposite.
Yeah.
There's reading the book at the wrong time. I believe that there's some sort of truck backing up in Raylene's house. So if
I can't even hear it with my headphones
on. If you all hear that beeping, just ignore that.
So sorry. The window is open because my cat is kind of stressed right now. And so he likes looking out the window. And so I have it open so that he can actually sit on the ledge.
It's so. Worth the beeping if it makes Simon happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Simon needed to be happy. He was having a hard time.
But yeah, so the opposite, I think, is like when you just encounter a book at the wrong time and maybe something about your mood or your life or whatever, it just clashes with everything in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened with me. I was, first of all, traveling. And I haven't traveled in a long time
yeah.
because of the pandemic. And it wasn't like a big trip. It was like an hour flight to get to my boyfriend's family. But then we were there for 2 weeks and then the flight back. And I was doing home renovations the week before. And so I was trying to cram in this book. At the same time, Raylene and I were doing another kind of book club thing for our Patreon,
yeah.
where we were trying to read three other books. And
it was stupid. What were we thinking?
It was stupid. And then right before that, like, it was pretty recent, we had just read Emma by Jane Austen.
Yeah.
And I was kind of still exhausted from that kind of a mega 500-page classic book.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these stars disaligned so that when I started reading this, I was already on the wrong foot from page
totally.
One.
Yeah.
I don't think I was in the right frame of mind. And so I sort of, you know, I kept reading, I kept trudging, and that's what it felt like, trudging.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a soldier's duty. It was my solemn duty to read this book for our book club. And so I trudged, but I wasn't like, oh, yay, I can't wait to pick this book up again.
Mm-hmm.
It was homework amidst all of these other things that were going on. And so I didn't really enjoy it. It was not an enjoyable reading experience for me. And as you pointed out, there is so much going on in this book, which
yeah.
I think might be a strength of it if you're in the mood. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like if you're in the mood for like a huge saga
yeah.
that it really dives deep into this family and their you know, continuing issues that keep popping up generation after generation, then that's great. Because, I mean, this book, though, I think we should mention, is a very polarizing book to begin with. People either absolutely love it or they absolutely hate it. Like, there's not a lot of in between, because people either really connect with that and connect with the writing, because the writing is pretty great, I guess. Like, that's something that the book has. But it is so long, and there's not a lot of dialogue. It's mostly, you know, just kind of huge pages of text just to explaining stuff that's happening, and it's easy to get lost in that if that's not the type of thing you enjoy. So it is, you know, a love it or hate it kind of thing to begin with, and I don't think I ever could have been on the love it side.
I think because I've, you know, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, he's definitely got his own style, and he's got a very specific thing he's doing in this book. Like you're saying, if you're not meshing with it, there's no way you can partly enjoy it. It's just going to be a trudge. If you do mesh with, it's like hot sauce or something. Like, if you like hot sauce, you'll like it. But if you don't, you can't sort of like hot sauce. It's painful.
You can't keep taking bites because it's going to hurt you every single time.
But all of that being said, so, you know, I trudged through it. There were moments I liked. It's very similar to you. I really liked the first section because it was very unique. I liked learning about the creation of this town. And I liked the kind of, I don't know, there was a very, a remoteness, right, to the solitude of this weird village and these kind of magical but non-magical, aka magical realist things that were going on. You know, I really enjoyed that, but as it kept going, and also because I was sort of rushing through it because of the book club, there are so many names that are repeated. We should probably talk about that because I know that this is a thing that a lot of people struggle with, and it must be, or else they wouldn't have put a family tree at the beginning of the book because all of the characters are named after all of their ancestors. So it's the same names over and over and over again. And but there's bleed through where, like, you know, the dad is still alive and he's got three sons that are still named the same thing. And then those kids have some kids and then they name them after their dad. And so you got, like, I mean, at one point, this one guy has 17 kids and they just name all 17 of them his name.
That was one of the things I liked about the book, is how silly it could be at times. I was like, that's kind of hilarious.
It is hilarious. So, you know, I charged through it or whatever, but then in preparation of today's recording, I've been doing some research about the book to try and brush up on ideas, concepts, and Raylene, what do you know? I fell in love with the research side of it. With the breakdowns. And it sort of reminded me of my experience with The Vegetarian by Han Kang, where I was like, I didn't really enjoy the book, but there's so much I could talk about with it, or I would be able to write an essay about it, because there's a lot to unpack there, you know? Or with other books I've read where especially like in school, where I'm like, no, I don't really like that, but I could still talk about it. It's still interesting to talk about it. There's still lots of stuff here. One of the things that I just sort of came upon in different readings of people talking about the book was similarities to the Bible. And I found it so fascinating. So for one of the examples was like the Old Testament, the first half of the Bible, is like characters live to be like 100 years old, you know, 200 years old. And they're kind of like legends and myths and Noah's Ark and, you know, like these Cain and Abel, these almost like, you know, I mean, now they are like these mythical tales. And then the second half of the book, the New Testament, is finally my Catholic school training really came in here, you guys. For this one moment, it was all worth it. The New Testament is, you know, quote unquote, the modern stuff, right? Because now it's 2,000 years ago, but the modern stuff, and people live a lot shorter and they die a lot faster and they're riddled by, you know, like short lives. And we have the modernity of like the Roman Empire and the influence of commerce. And like that was really echoed in the book, actually. The beginning, you have that sort of remoteness of Makondo, small village, mm-hmm. magical things. And then as it goes on, the lives are shorter. More people die, riddled with plague, the mm-hmm. commerce, the trains and the movie theaters and the plantation. Like everything becomes corrupted and at the end can't survive. And there was also like... the 5 years of rain, like that's very biblical, you know. Yeah. So also like all of the names being repeated, stuff like that. So I thought that was really cool, and I was like, you know, that's really interesting. And the more I read about the book, the more I was like, God damn it, I want to reread it.
Oh no! And
I want to read it at a time when I don't feel so much pressure to read it, mm-hmm. and I'm not in a big rush, and there aren't all these other, when it doesn't feel like homework, I guess.
Yeah.
So I can give it more time. And I just feel like it is one of those very complicated things. Like, you know, when you're in high school and you're supposed to read a chapter for math class and you read it and you're like, I absorbed nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know what that meant. So you have to read it again. But then on that second reading, you kind of do get something out mm-hmm. of it. Maybe that's what's happened with me in 100 Years of Solitude. So I don't know if my time is done with this book, Raylene.
Okay.
Let's now jump into voice clips from our listeners. And I'm just playing these in the order they were sent. We have not heard these yet. So let's start with Elena.
Hi. This is Elena calling from Aberdeen, Scotland. I really enjoyed this book. To me, it was a kind of modern Iliad and Odyssey where you would have demigods and weird sprites and temptations and a lot of incest and a lot of questionable sexual relationships, but it would be an adventure, and I thought it was cool that it was in one place. I also loved Ursula as a kind of Penelope figure. To me, it reminds me of a Vermeer painting or other Dutch masters where it's so busy and there are so many grotesque things happening that you can always find something when you keep going back. So I was wondering if you had to pick a still image to represent this book, either a painting, a photograph, a drawing, what would it be? And do you generally think of books in terms of paintings? Thanks.
Well, that was a very interesting question. Elena is clearly much smarter than we are, mm-hmm. whipping out her Iliad, Odyssey, and Vermeer references.
Cool.
By the way, everyone, once we get into our voice clips that are sent in by listeners, I should warn, spoilers are maybe going to happen because we haven't heard these and we don't know and we could answer with spoilers. So if you don't want to get spoiled, now's your moment to leave. But yes, I was going to say, like, one of the things that I thought was really interesting in the book was the way it ended, right? So mm-hmm. here I am with a big spoiler, but basically it was all for nothing, right?
Yeah.
Because the entire town gets washed away and he's reading the prophecy and the prophecy says, by the time you get to the end of reading this prophecy, you will die and so will the town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, okay, so this was all completely destructive. So to answer Elena's question, Christ, I don't know the name of the painting. Okay, it's this massive painting. It has heaven, purgatory, and hell in it.
Ooh.
And I think that it's like a mural, or I think it's an on-site piece. Let me type it in and try and find the title of it. But did anything occur to you?
Well, through listening to that voice clip, I was reminded of Ursula as a character and how much I liked her, because she seemed like the only sane person in this entire family. Like, she was kind of the backbone that was there the entire time through all of the insanity. And she seems to be the one who was the most level-headed throughout the whole thing. So just in general, I really enjoyed Ursula. And towards the end of the book, or maybe it's not completely at the end, but when Ursula goes blind and can, like, she understands what's still happening around her because her family is so predictable and she, like, knows everything in the house.
That was
so
kind
of
spooky.
It was spooky, but I'm not really good at knowing paintings and things, but I'm just imagining this as like a tableau, like Ursula surrounded by her crazy family, like in the house, maybe just doing things around the house, and she's just kind of there, like, witnessing it all, even though she can't see it. I don't know. I can imagine that somehow as, yeah, like, a painting, like a huge painting with all these different things going on. I feel like that would capture the book for me, because that's kind of how the whole book felt, was like, there's Ursula in the middle of all this craziness. So that's what kind of painting I would want to see.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
The one I was thinking of is called The Last Judgment by our Mr. Michelangelo.
Ooh.
And here, I can show you how busy it is, Raylene.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that that definitely fits the same vibe that I'm looking for here.
Yeah, exactly. There's apparently, it says, over 300 figures.
Wow.
And they're, like, ascending to hell, ascending to heaven, or struggling to ascend to heaven. You know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm, it's called The Last Judgment, so it's kind of like, was your life worth ascension or not? Mm-hmm. And there's just so many bodies packed into one picture. So that's the one I would pick. And I was right. I'm just, I haven't studied art history in a really long time, so I was just really proud of myself that I remembered that it was stuck somewhere. Do you remember I said it was like, I think it's on site. I don't think it's like a painting, but of course, it's a Michelangelo, so it's a fresco on the Sistine Chapel. there you go. Anyways, I think that's really cool. I think also, maybe just because of the Latin American influence, and maybe because of the cover I have, which is this
beautiful
Harper Perennial Modern Classics cover, I think of Frida Kahlo's paintings. She has this one painting, she has a lot of paintings that are, like, very nature-focused and stuff, but there's this one where it's, like, a lighter-skinned version of her laying on a darker-skinned version of her, because she's a mixed race, right? Yeah. So she, her dad was German and her mom was Mexican. And so she has those two kind of selves, and they're, like, laying in the jungle. I think it would be really cool to get, like, a big family portrait of them all, like, but within, like, trees and stuff.
Yeah.
Because there is that, like, sort of, they're in this remote jungly place mixed with, like, the family portrait of them all just laying there. Mm-hmm. I think that would be cool.
That's very
cool. Well, thanks for that. That was a fun way to think about the
book. I like that one a lot.
All right, our next one comes from Sophia.
Hey, Ariel and Raylene. This is Sophia from Argentina. I found it really easy to get swept up by this book. I thought the language was rich and fun, and the story was quite engaging most of the time, and it almost read like a telenovela, like a soap opera. But at the same time, I found some of the subject matter quite uncomfortable, and I couldn't help but feel this author is a man at points. Have you felt this? I'm curious to know. Thank you.
Well, that was interesting. I like her reference to telenovelas. My mom watches a lot of novelas, which, like, they're this interesting breed. They're like soap operas, but they're also just like sitcom, like, not sitcom, well, they can be, I don't know, it's just like their own genre of TV. Like, anime is its own genre, it's its own thing. And a lot of the time it will just be like crazy family drama, like, this person marries this person but they're cheating on this person, and then that person shoots that person. So I definitely know what she means.
This book is definitely that.
It definitely is that. But also, the uncomfortable moments. There are a few uncomfortable moments, aren't there? I mean, there is a lot of incest.
Yeah, like a man being obsessed with his 9-year-old niece. That's one thing.
Yeah, but, like, so much incest. Things got a little wild in there. I actually tried looking up the incestual stuff because,
like, what was the purpose for that?
Yeah, I couldn't find anything convincing. I don't understand incest, and incest makes me really uncomfortable. Like, obviously there's also incest in, like, Game of Thrones and stuff, and whenever I'm like, why? Why was that? I can kind of understand it in Game of Thrones a little bit, because, like, they're royals, and they're so, like,
they're obsessed with keeping the bloodline pure and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. But that wasn't the thing in this. They don't care. They didn't seem to care about the, like, Buendia name or anything. Yeah.
They were all just obsessed with each other for some reason.
Yeah, I found that really strange. I I don't know what to make of it. I guess just like this is the saga of that family, and yeah, that, so the family, so it's kind of self-contained,
like every,
it's a self-contained, yes.
Yeah, like there's not that many outside people who kind of enter into the family,
yeah,
so much,
exactly. But still, like, and like, okay, at the end you have just like the last two remaining people, and then they die, and or their baby dies. That was also kind of messed up. But like, and he, the guy realizes like, oh, this is it. The line died. I just saw the last person who could have kept this line alive, and they've now passed away. Well, I say passed away, died of neglect, because he let him, that baby just rot. But anyways, so there's, like you said, there's that self-containment, but then also the inability to exist. Like, they were not able to preserve. They were not able to maintain the line. It just sort of dies off. As for, like, a misogynistic thing, I didn't really think about that at all when I was reading it.
I didn't think about it either, but it's like, how often, like, could you imagine this book being written by a woman?
Yes, 100 Years of Solitude is basically this exact book, but just more focus on the women and less focus on the men. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
Mean The House of the Spirits?
What did I just say?
You said 100 Years of Solitude.
Damn. Yes, I meant A House of the Spirits.
Oh, okay, cool, cool.
It's a very, very similar book, and I now can absolutely see the parallels between these two books. So
interesting.
And you know, like the House of the Spirits does focus a lot more on the women, but there's still revolution, there's still war, there's still like, you know, the communism and the fight for workers and the cheating and bloodlust and all of the drama is still in the House of the Spirits.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more domestic, I felt. Like, this one felt a little bit farther out from reality.
Yes, for sure.
Also, this one, I feel like, dealt with a lot more generations. Like, the other one was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was just three. It wasn't that much time. It wasn't, like, the whole 100 years.
Yeah, but this one, I feel like I kind of lost track of how many generations there actually were.
Totally.
Because you just, I think they all kind of blended together, which, with all of the names being similar, I think was kind of the point. It's like all of these people are kind of the same person. And it's even mentioned in the book, like, all of the, like, Arcadios kind of have similar personalities, and all of the Aurelianos kind of have similar personalities. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. All right, well, our next clip comes from Danielle.
Hey guys, I feel like everyone keeps saying this, but you guys are doing an awesome thing over there. I love the podcast and pretty much everything you do, so keep it up if you can. I was just really curious as to whether you guys had a favorite character at the moment. Because every character so far has had both the good and bad of their person basically plastered on a wall and underlined in red, I was just reading and thinking, I wonder whose quirks you're going to find the most endearing and who just paid you off. My favorite character when I first started the book was the senior most, Jose. And then as the book progressed, he kind of turned a bit, you know. So I switched quickly to Aureliano, as he feels really wholesome so far. Sorry if I butchered any names, and thank you for continuing to expand my literary landscapes. My God, I can't talk. As I feel like Aussies aren't really advertised to as much translated texts, and I've been loving all the recommendations so far. Lots of love, Danielle.
Oh my God, Danielle, you gave me goosebumps. Lovely. I want to cry. That was so nice. You know what, Raylene and I love translated books, so I'm really glad that we can kind of promote them everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we won't stop. Damn it, we've got a lot more. We will be reading over the, I don't know, I suspect we'll be doing this podcast for like the next 20 years, so there you go.
20 to 60.
We'll just keep going until we die. Old ladies, oh, I'd love that. You know what? Even if we, for some reason, like only do this for, 5 years and then we pause, we have to bring it back when we're 70.
100%. And
just like give a big update, give a big haul.
With all of our children named Ariel and Raylene.
What was the question? Sorry, I got swept up in how wonderful that message was.
Favorite character.
Oh, yes. I agree. My favorite character was the... I loved how Danielle said it. The senior most Jose. I just really enjoyed it because, or enjoyed that character because of how curious he was. I enjoyed, especially at the beginning. I know obviously the character grows and mutates and whatever, but like that beginning section where he's settling the town and he's discovering what ice is and what a telescope does and like what all these other implements do, and then he just tinkers away. That was my favorite.
Yeah, and he was very like driven to advance things, and he was, like you said, very curious. So he was very a cool character.
Yeah.
Like I already mentioned, I really like Ursula. So even in the early days, she was the one that made the most sense to me. So I would say Ursula was my favorite character.
Yeah. All right. Well, our next clip here comes from Stephanie.
Okay. So I DNF'd 100 Years of Solitude after, I think, 90-ish pages. It was just too strange for me. I'm not talking about magical realism. I'm fine with that. But a grown-up man falling in love with a child and lusting over her and marrying her, and that was just, it made me extremely uncomfortable, and that was the point where I wanted it to stop.
Well, if it helps, me and Raylene both also wanted to stop.
Yeah, we just weren't allowed to. Yeah. Yeah, that was something else I wanted to say. Like, if I had been reading this on my own, I probably wouldn't have made it past page 90 either. Yeah. I kept going because we were doing this book club and I committed myself to it. But it's the type of book where I'm like, it's really long. I'm not enjoying it already. It's time to put it down. So that's really admirable that she was able to do that.
Yes, believe me, we probably would have stopped ourselves. I'm glad that Stephanie sent in their clip because I realized that we're gonna have a bias on the people that send us the clips are gonna be the people that probably finished the book
or liked it generally.
At least get to the end of it. And so generally they're probably gonna have to like it to not have given up. So I'm glad we got to hear from Stephanie because I think we know a lot of people gave up because we've seen that in the Discord and we've seen that in different places. It's a challenging book. And like Stephanie said, it isn't just, you know, the magical realism. That maybe does add a layer of kind of like, you just have to let stuff wash over you. Yeah. I find with magical realism where you're like, okay, that lady just floated up to heaven. What do I do with that information?
Yeah, you just have to kind of move on.
Yeah, you got to kind of move on. But it's not just that, and it's not just the complicated names, and it isn't just the literal 100 years of history and the dozens and dozens of characters, and they all have the like little mini cycles that everyone seems to be repeating, and everyone has the same personalities, and they're all cheating, and they're all have like incesting. Like, there's a lot going on here. It's a challenging read. It is a challenging read. It's really funny though, because at the back of my book, like I said, I have the Harper Perennial edition. At the back of my book, it gives a really interesting biography of the author, just a few pages, but it was really cool. For example, explains like he lived pretty rural Columbia style in when he was a kid with his grandparents, and he heard a lot of stories from his grandmother, and the way that she told her stories was the way that he wrote this book. Like, there's all sorts of really interesting stuff there. But also, when I was looking stuff online, the massacre that happens with the workers at the banana plantation actually happened while he was alive, and so he like wrote that into the book. But at the back of the book, my edition, there's this thing called The Great Novel of the Americas, and it just talks about like how much of a success this book is and how all of this praise, like the amount of praise that this book got is literally absurd, the things people are saying here. Pablo Neruda called it the greatest revelation in the Spanish language since Don Quixote of Cervantes.
Whoa.
And it's like, wow, okay. And then William Kennedy insisted that it was the first piece of literature since the book of Genesis that should be required reading for the entire human race.
That's intense. I have to disagree.
It's just, But like you said, I think that obviously this book is going to promote itself at the back. They're not going to put reviews that, of people that hated the book. They want to sell the copies of the book. But like you said, it's a pretty, I think, a divided book. And I think it's not going to work for everyone. But I am interested. I really do think one day, I'm not saying any day soon, really. And don't get it twisted. But I do think one day I want to give it another shot. I still did like 100 Years of Solid, or no, I keep saying the wrong one. House of the Spirits. I like that one more, but maybe I gotta reread that one too.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next message comes from Alex.
Hi, my name is Alex, and this is my question for the both of you about the book. With this book being mainly about how the family interacts with each other, I wonder how the story would have changed if Ursula would have died after giving birth to all her children. With her being in most of the book and really well past 100 years, but it's often put in the background of the chapters of the book, what would happen if she had died much earlier? If the story would have changed, and how? And if not, why?
Thanks, Alex, for your question. What do you think, Raylene? How do you think the book would have changed?
If Ursula had died, I think it would have been even more chaos, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think everything would have erupted and maybe there wouldn't have been so many generations. I don't know.
I just
feel like she really held things together and like people were super crazy even with her around. Imagine what would have happened if she wasn't around.
Yeah, she really grounds it a little bit because it's like this anchor to the beginnings of the town. One of the things that I think is really interesting about this book is the theme of memory, I guess you could we would call it. Again, I saw people writing about this with this book, but like there is an obsession with memory and like who remembers what and what is forgotten. Do you remember kind of earlier on there's that period where everyone starts to get amnesia?
Oh yeah.
And like everyone's forgetting everything and they start putting signs on things and they're like, this is a cow, you have to milk it. Don't forget that God exists. And then eventually that gets solved. I don't really remember how, but like isn't there just like a spell or something? I forget. Anyway,
probably. Like, I don't remember a lot of things from early on in the book.
But like it gets fixed and everyone remembers everything again. But then it's like, there was this other, I even think I might have written it down. Hold on. My notes say, what's with the incest?
That's pretty much what my notes were like too. It was like, oh my God, that person just died. Wow.
But yeah, forgetting the past leads to ruin is basically what I wrote here. But just like there's other episodes where remember when with the banana massacre, banana plantation massacre, the guy comes back to town and nobody remembers that happened. And he's like trying to, and it's, again, it's just sort of like, if you don't remember the past, how can you move forward into the future? And then ultimately at the end of the book nobody remembers the history and the whole town dies, so yeah, Ursula amazing. As that sort of representative of the past, once she passes it's sort of like the thing is sealed, this is all done.
Well, she became a raisin. That was crazy. I was like, she just became a raisin. What does that even mean?
What do I do with that, Gabriel?
I don't understand what to say, what to think.
Okay, well, our final message comes from Jillian.
So one of the quotes I marked really early on in the book is when Jose Arcadio Buendia says love is a disease. And that concept was just so prevalent for me throughout the whole story, that these characters are having these intense love affairs and feelings of love and lust and all those really powerful emotions that kind of thread together this cyclical timeline that's been written in this story. And I just think the concept of love as a disease in this novel is so interesting.
You're right. There was love in this book. Dysfunctional relationships abound. It was, in fact, slightly Game of Thronesy in that way. Everyone was sleeping with everyone and it never worked out.
Yeah, and imagine if people hadn't been sleeping with each other. I feel like there wouldn't have been so many people brought to ruin.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
You know, if they had avoided that.
It was so
I feel like that is a very good point.
At a certain point, you know what? At a certain point, I just kind of had been overexposed to incest, to familial relationships. And, like, what wouldn't even bat an eyelash anymore when it was, like,
yeah,
this person wanted to sleep with their aunt. And I was like, uh-huh. And what did they? Yep. Okay. And they had a bastard child. Okay. Yep. Go on. And it was just like,
yeah,
it didn't even faze me anymore. And in that way, I guess I would say like Marquez completely eroded the concept of love. Like, I didn't really believe that any of these characters were in love. By the end of the book, I was like, this is a loveless, godless place.
Seriously.
This is kind of a really big question to end on. Not to put a lot of pressure on you, Raylene.
Feeling the pressure already.
But what do you think is a major point of this book? Like, what do you think it's trying to say? I know it's a big question.
It is a big question, but I think it kind of falls somewhere under the umbrella of, like, the sins of the father can, like, fuck up an entire, you know, everyone that follows after him.
Yeah.
I think is kind of what it's trying to say.
Yes, I think that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, do I agree with that message? I don't know. Maybe, probably not, but, like, it's an interesting thing, I guess, and I think that's kind of the main overarching thing throughout the book is that,
yeah,
you know, if one person does something wrong, it'll, you know, instill something in his child or his children that will make them do the same thing wrong or whatever.
Yeah,
it may be.
Because the traits were genetic, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It depend, like, however, what kind of person your dad was or mom was is how you were gonna be as well. So yeah. That is an interesting.
And I mean, that can often be true. People often take after their parents or at least one of their parents. So this was just took it to an extreme level.
Yes.
Made it kind of over the top to really, really hammer that home.
Yeah. I mean, in that way, I feel like this book, probably part of the reason that it's so famous and ubiquitous is probably just because it has a million big themes to write essays about.
Definitely.
Assign this to a classroom and you get a bunch of different depressed essays. They'd be depressed, but they would be essays. I also, in my reading, I did find a lot of really interesting arguments and essays and thoughts, blah, 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 about how this is sort of Marquez's, like, big moral about what's happening to Latin America and to Colombia. Oh, yeah. And, you know, you have the awfulness of the plantation, of the banana plantation, and you have, like, the Macondo's inability to really modernize in a way that is good, right? Like, the modernity comes, but it destroys Macondo. It was way better before the train and the movies and like all of the sin that comes with it, right? And then also the, like, it was so lonely until all of that influence came in and that ended up killing it. So there was a lot of interesting, like, things that I read about how it's a novel about Latin America and South America, of course.
Yeah.
So again, maybe in 70 years we'll reread it.
Exactly. Wait until I have 90. Nothing else to read.
Well, until we start looping back.
Yep.
Well, thank you to everyone who participated or tried to participate in this book club. We learned a lesson here, and that is to not trust you guys with voting.
So sorry, but...
but because you guys made us read Emma, which was 500-page classic, and then 100 Years of Solitude, so... we're probably next time... when's our next book club? It's going to be kind of in the wintery time,
the
right?
Winter, I guess.
Yeah. So in a few months, we'll post another vote, and it will probably just have two books, and they'll both be novellas. And,
and you won't get much choice. We'll just choose a book ourselves. No vote.
We'll just choose our own book, and we'll say, which one do you vote for? The one we want? Or this one that we already picked. Yeah, that's right. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much to everyone for listening to this podcast. We hope you're having a nice week, and we will talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.